Welcome to today's episode of Smart Citizen. I'm so glad that you're here for this conversation with candidate Gary Hubbard, who is running for Virginia Beach City Council. I'm Emily Bose, and this is Smart Citizen. Gary, thank you so much for being on with me today. Tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're running for City Council.
All right, Emily. Good evening, and hello to the people in Facebook land. My name is Gary Hubbard, and I'm running for City Council in Rose Hall District. Back when the hurricane, I believe it was Matthew, hit, my sister-in-law lived in Windsor Woods. She lost her home. She lost her cars. She lost everything inside her home. Water was 2 or 3 feet. And she tried to keep her home. She spent all her savings. She spent every penny she had. And I, quite frankly, I did offer my help, but she didn't want it. So she put a little camper in the driveway and started ripping this out. FEMA didn't help. FEMA was later, 2 years later, did send some money. So this situation here was really hit home. At 60 some years old, 65, she lost everything she worked for her entire life. And rented a room with one of her girlfriends that she grew up with here in the area and continues to work to this day and will not be able to retire, period, because of the cost associated with this. Simply because Virginia Beach has been kicking this can down the road for the last 15 years. We've got to understand how to mitigate flooding. I'm a commercial and residential construction contractor, and I've been in business since 1981. Before that, I ran a large construction company. I'm a military veteran. I'm the only businessman and military veteran running in the Rose Hall District. We've got some real bad problems that we're looking at. We're looking at a health crisis. We're looking at an economic crisis. And we're looking at a racial crisis. You know, diversity is a strength. It's not a weakness. We have to reach out. In my construction business, if a man or a woman, no matter who they were, if they did the same job, I paid them the same amount of money. And I never paid them a minimum wage. It's just not possible for them to actually come to work, provide transportation, be on the job at time at $7 an hour or $8 an hour. I never paid less than $15 an hour, even for the laborers. Some of them went up to $30 and $40 an hour. I'll get into that also about the apprenticeship programs instead of formal education. Sometimes the formal education is not the end all be all that everybody thinks it is. You know, you can accrue debt $250,000, $260,000 and wondering how you're going to pay this debt off at 8%. Money costs money. People don't understand if you start to borrow money, you have to pay for that money. It's just like anything else. Money to me is a tool. You got to know how to use it. And when to use it. So on that end of it, we've got to look at three main focuses here. How to put our economy back together in Virginia Beach due to the COVID, the coronavirus problems. And that's a for real, deadly, highly infectious disease that people seem to think they're not taking serious. We have the tools to stop the spread of the virus. We just flat refuse to use them. And then looking at our business sectors that have been hit hard. Some of them are trying to reopen, but that doesn't mean, even if they reopen, that they're going to have a customer base return like they once had to begin with. So we have to look at how we're going to help these small businesses return back to what they used to be before this virus hit. I believe in a situation like this, we're going to have to actually, somehow there's a grant program going on that the city's giving away some of your tax money to help these other people. Because the city, we have to understand how the city actually gets their money from property tax, from sales tax, from food tax, from lodging tax. But every bit of the money they get is taxpayers' money. The city doesn't have money. The city doesn't manufacture money. The city only has the money that we give them. And you can only take so many feathers from the golden goose before it's dead. So we got to understand what economic impact truly is against where we live. If we push out the people that live in the city of Virginia Beach, and we're losing population right now, then we're in trouble because the city is a city because of the citizens in that city. City has to have amenities. It has to provide transportation. It has to provide safety issues. It has to provide health issues. It has to provide. That's what the definition of a city is. And as far as transportation, now we bought a right of way from, I believe it was Norfolk Southern, and with 30, 40 million. We'll have to look about and see what the exact figures are. But that right of way is just in, just sitting there doing nothing. We cut the grass and it's just a waste of time. It was put there for light rail, and light rail was voted down by the citizens. And I've seen costs go for light rail from $100 million all the way up to into billions. I mean, we've got to provide some transportation, maybe the European model, where we have smaller buses that will have more frequent stops to be able to pick people up, to move people back and forth to work, move them to the beach, move them to where they can actually go buy groceries, get back on the bus and go home.
But almost like a shuttle system?
Well, I actually think that would be fantastic. You've got maybe, what is it, maybe the 15 mile from the Newtown Road exit or to the beachfront, and run it back and forth, and maybe have a little couple of corridors, couple of shops and stores there, little mom and pop deals that they can actually shop, or maybe make a day of it going back and forth to the beach, you know, because the shuttle's going to run, and it'll run, hopefully it would run to maybe 12 at night, so people can go down there, come back and forth, enjoy the beach, spend money, increase revenues, and now is the time that we need to increase revenues, because we're going to have a shortfall, even though the tourism industry is doing okay, it's not doing great. People seem to think, well, it's doing great. No, it isn't. Not really. You've got to understand what money is and where it costs and how much you're going to spend to bring in $12.50 when you're spending $100 million. So we've got to understand that budgets and in business, and if you're a businessman such as I am, you look to the future to look and see what viable projects out in the future are viable and worth taking the risk on to get mm-hmm. some sort of return on the investment.
Absolutely. You've mentioned so many different interesting things that I would love to dive further into. I know we wanted to talk about transportation today. That's an issue that I care a lot about. I actually have asked everyone so far that I've interviewed that's running for city council about public transit because I actually lived here myself for 9 months without a car and have lived in several cities that have, you know, various public transportation options. So that's an issue I'd love to chat with you more about because it's one that I'm particularly interested in. But I know that an issue that you are particularly passionate about, I've talked a lot about, is flooding. So let's go one by one so that people can really follow, you know, specific issues, because I think it can be easy to run one into the next. And I want to make sure that people really understand your perspective, or not just that, but you have some specific policy proposals that you're wanting to make. And I would love for people to be able to hear about that. So you talked about infrastructure, and it, from what I've seen, it looks like flooding, flood mitigation, and infrastructure are the biggest priority for you come if you were to be elected. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it is, Emily.
And you so know, what would you plan to do? What would you propose as a policy or a change to what's currently being done for flood mitigation specifically?
Well, what we've got to do, we've really got to start taking the very first steps to actually do flood mitigation. You know, a journey of 1,000 miles began with the first steps. I think we've brought in maybe $150 million with the stormwater fees and maybe spent maybe $30 or $40 million. So I don't know where that money is going. And quite frankly, I'm not privileged to know where that budget money is actually going. But I also understand the true words of infrastructure. And my business is a construction contractor. We understand what curbs, streets, gutters, storm drainage systems, how they truly work. We understand what soil bores are when you look at what the soil itself is made up. And when the soil, when it's actually subsidence, that means the ground is sinking, you're taking out too much water and not putting enough in. So we've got some situations that we've got to really, truly look at. You know, our holding ponds, they're silting over. So if the pond is silting over, it doesn't hold as much water anymore. and our drainage ditches. We've got miles of drainage ditches and canals that, you know, have got trees growing in them. Maybe we can't service these, you know, right then and there, but we have quite a few people that the city of Virginia Beach hires. And whether it's public works or public utilities, or where our culverts, the diameter of the pipe of the culvert is old and outdated. Since we've decided to build so many houses and we've decided to pave over so much raw ground, there's nowhere for the water to go anymore. It cannot be absorbed. Our tree canopy is gone. We've cut down all the trees. They can't absorb the water and put it back in the air. So now we've got to handle the water. If it's the pumps that we're using to pump it back where it needs to go and then flood somebody else out. So we've got to replace this old and outdated small diameter pipes that no longer can carry the quantity of the water to go through this pipe. And they're silted over also. Hmm. So we've got to start maintaining what we actually own in the city. From one end of our city to the other end. This is old infrastructure. You know, we've got to start. It's a situation of pay me now or pay me later. This would have been a lot cheaper 15 years ago or 20 years ago. Hmm. And the lack of the city council to be able to make a decision, their indecision, is going to cost us, quite frankly, an enormous amount of money, because we got sea level rise, the changing of our environment, the wetlands that are actually decimated now. So there's no buffer system there. We're going to have to bring that back. So we've actually got to start doing this. We have the knowledge now. There's universities, there's NOAA, there's Surfrider Foundation that actually give beaches grades to what they're doing as far as sedimentation, as far as environment, as far as development. And I think Virginia Beach has a C. We got a long way to go to bring our grades up.
So that's a good explanation of a lot of the challenges we're facing. And obviously infrastructure solutions can be quite costly. And I've seen you talk about, you know, proposing some solutions that maybe would not involve increasing taxes, or, you know, how that's always the question, right? When it's like, okay, we have a problem. And we can recognize that we have a problem. We need to come up with practical solutions. And then how do you pay for it? That's always the next logical step, you know, as a businessman, right? So how would you, if these things are, you know, pressing and urgent, and I would imagine if you're replacing pipes, you're probably having to take them out, put in new ones. It seems quite labor intensive. So how would we go about making those changes? What would that look like on a practical level?
Well, we're going to have to use local government to access state governments and also to access the federal government, because we've got roads that's going to be underwater, like Sand Bridge and Pungo, and, you know, they can't get back and forth. And quite frankly, we're one storm away from catastrophic damage. So there's just no way that we can actually tax the citizens of Virginia Beach to get this kind of money that we're going to need. So we're going to have to reach out to our state government. We're going to have to reach out to our federal government, see what programs are available. Because now we've built so close to the ocean, sometimes right dead on it, that we've got to protect this infrastructure. So they're going to spend the money to protect the infrastructure at the beach. And it's so sad, too bad for you homeowners, that you're going to be sitting in a foot of water and the city's going to come to you and say, well, don't worry about this. We're going to take care of this in 3 to 5 years. You just hold on. That's not the way this works. It really, truly isn't. You've got to look at the areas that are truly bad. In Magic Hollow, we have some of the worst ones: Windsor Wood, Princess Anne Plaza, Aragona. A lot of the areas flood. People start to worry now if there's a heavy rain, and a heavy rain will flood our area. Hmm. These are situations that, you know, there's no longer any controversy about sea level rise and changing of our climate. The only thing they worry about now is it man-made or is it natural-made? It is occurring. We have greenhouse gases that we need to somehow reduce, cut back on. Even if you save a tenth of a degree, you're going to stop some of the sea level rise. Once the sea level rise, you know, and then the tides bring it in, and it's going to come in higher. So we've got to look at situations that maybe a buffer system, southern watershed. In Venice, the city of Venice, they have what's known as a rubber seawall, and they raise it up. They've done real well. But these are costly solutions. Once you define the problem, then you can start looking at solutions and hope you have enough time that we don't get hit with another catastrophic storm and still lose millions and millions of dollars and more and actually disrupt the very people that live in our city. You shouldn't have to worry about living in our city if you see a rain coming in. But that's quite frankly what happens now. So we're going to have to look at this situation.
And we know it rains here quite often. We get a lot of rain in this area. So your proposal would it be more on the doing a study to figure out what we need or looking at writing grants? I mean, it seems like you're really passionate about this. So I'm curious, you know, how that would move forward if you were sitting on the city council. How would you try to move the needle on this specifically? Do you think we need, because if we're trying to define the problem, do we need more information to really understand how or where it's happening? Or is it more just the solution gathering and probably grant writing and that kind of stuff now?
Well, what it is now, let's look into the other cities that's actually done something. Let's look at the state of New Jersey. They've actually implemented many new programs. Same thing with New York, up and down the East Coast. Let's work together for a change to arrive at a solution that maybe the cost can be mitigated, you know, from the state and the federal end of it, maybe get some federal money to come in and everything. Maybe a buyback program from areas that are hardest hit. We're out of time now, so we're going to have to look at maybe we can buy out some of these homeowners, move this infrastructure out of the way, reclaim the land that is covered up now, plant more trees, not 101 like they're doing and they're telling the developers or the general contractors, if you tear down a tree, you know, plant one back. That's the status quo. The status quo will not work. If you're going to tear down one tree, plant five back. So we can actually put back the canopy to actually get rid of some of this water and actually increase the wetlands that we have as a buffer system so it doesn't come in. And stop building right dead on the sand. Keep a buffer back, maybe 200 to 500 yards from building dead on the sand. And that's one thing with Rudy Loop. I would leave Rudy Loop alone. I would vote no development to Rudy Loop. You know, just cut the grass, pick up the trash, and leave it alone. Let's give the citizens of Virginia Beach a chance to actually look at the ocean for a change instead of all the hotels running up and down Hotel Road.
I had a conversation with Nadine Panisha a week or so ago, who's also running for city council in another district. And she's also super passionate about this issue. And we talked about some interesting projects and things that are ongoing that I thought were encouraging in relation to this with, you know, the Back Bay Foundation and different things that, you know, are being looked at as far as rebuilding the wetlands and some of the grasses and things. And it sounds like, you know, obviously it sounds like we need more, but it seems like there are some good or some interesting plans happening. I talked to Councilwoman Rosemary Wilson last week, and she was also talking about some think projects they're working on specifically for Windsor Woods to try to address some of the challenges there and trying to be creative with
some good ideas.
Some of the solutions like turning the golf course into a park that can flood and redirecting water to flood into that area so it's safe to fill with water when it's raining and then it'll be a park when it's not. I thought there were some interesting things. So do you think that our outlook is hopeful going forward, that there's some good ideas going on? Or do you think we're in a dire situation and we just need to start from scratch? Where do you think that we are from your perspective?
Well, you know, the environment, the actual environmental change that's happening in the world itself, You know, water is a resource that's more worth more than gold, silver, whatever. You know, civilizations have come and gone and fought over this in antiquity. So we have to actually, as a nation, as a world in general, actually address environment. The changing of our climates, the sea level rise, this just doesn't happen here. This is happening everywhere. Guatemala, the droughts, the fires, the lack of resources. But in Virginia Beach itself, there's it's not all doom and gloom. We can actually start working on this and to mitigate this flooding and keep ourselves to a point. You cannot do away with flooding altogether because we're a coastal city and we're low-lying. So anytime there's a major storm coming in, we're going to have flooding. But how we actually deal with it from this point on is a good idea. So Rosemary has some good ideas, to take and buy back some of these houses in Windsor Woods. You know, it's a simple concept. Water runs downhill. If you flood in from storm surges, this water is going to go where? It's going to go as far as it can go without until it meets resistance. So we've got to put some resistance to that. We've got to build our buffers back. We've got to quit building so close to the oceanfront, our infrastructure, whether hotels and everything, that we're going to have to try to keep from being flooded now. So, we've got a lot of infrastructure, a lot of money put down at the beach that they're going to protect. So now's the time to actually start looking at solutions. And it's going to take quite a few collective heads put together, whether it's from ODU, from its NOAA, from the states that actually are facing the same problem, from the West Coast to the East Coast. The West Coast used to have it as bad. But now they're having the same problems that we have. Coastal erosion, the erosion of our lands. Back Bay, I put on a post on Back Bay one time where people used to play on the ball field and now it's 3 feet underwater. This happens. This is real. Eastern right. Shore, the actual salt intrusion of the wells and their water. And they've got two aquifers. So all of this ties in with each other. Our land, our water comes from Lake Gaston. We've got to make sure that, we have clean water. How do we have clean water? If we keep flooding our water system, you're going to be drinking dirty water, whether you know it or not.
Right. No, that's a great point. So speaking of the environment, let's go back to transportation. I know you mentioned it before. And as I said, that's a topic that I am very interested in and have experienced the public transit or lack thereof in Virginia Beach myself, and am interested in hearing your ideas. So I've heard some mention of this idea as we've been having these conversations about shuttles, and I'm not familiar with the access that you were talking about from Norfolk Southern. So can you tell me a little bit more about what that means, what that is? Is that just a piece of property or... What is that?
It was a piece of property that the city bought, and I think the cost was around $40 million. I'm not too sure, and don't quote me on that figure, but it ran from Newtown Road all the way to the oceanfront, and they were going to use the existing rail structure to have the Norfolk Tide come from there and go all the way down to the oceanfront. And the cost was so enormous that the city voted it down, and there was quite a bit of opposition to it. So now we're back to a transportation system where we use buses. We've got large buses that have minimum routes and minimum stops. The European model has smaller buses, but it has more frequent stops and more people ride the bus there on that end of it. Now we got to look at resilience. Now we've got a brain drain, and you're absolutely right, where people graduate and then they want to spread their wings and leave and go this way or that way. I did the same thing myself. But we've got to keep our young people here so we can have innovators and inventors and entrepreneurs to keep our city growing. Mm-hmm. So how do we make our city more attractive to bringing in new business and new and higher paying business, new technology? We've got, cables that's going to end up in the city at the Virginia Beach so we can have more tech companies come here.
But the transatlantic cable?
Right. The transatlantic cable is going to be a new high-tech hub. So it'll come. It just don't know exactly when it's going to come, but it'll create new jobs. But we've got to have three things to make it attractive here. You got to have resilience. You got to be able to move about the city. You've got to have land available for somebody to build a new business here. Then you got to have a labor force to draw from. You got to have an educated labor force, depending on the business itself. And then you've got to have money available to make these businesses work. Some concessions we'll have to have, but we'll get a return on investment because we'll increase our tax base. We'll increase the businesses that the customers that will utilize these businesses. But we have to make it attractive to bring in higher paying jobs. We're never going to work our way out of it with minimum wage paying jobs. It's just not going to happen. $8, $10, $12 an hour jobs just will not work. If you've got housing, and affordable housing is what we're going to have. If you've got housing that's renting from $12 to $15, $1,600 a month, and you don't even make enough to pay that, and that leaves nothing for food, clothes, gas, transportation. So we've got to actually have higher paying jobs. We're going to have to be a city that's going to need to be kicking, dragging, screaming into the 21st century. But we'll get there. I truly believe it. Better days are ahead. We're not going to be in doom and gloom forever, but we've got problems that you're going to need experience to guide us through this. And I've been in business since 1981 as a sole operator, a sole proprietor. And I've sat at my kitchen table where I've hired quite a few men and women and worrying about the next payroll and how am I going to make payroll. The reason and the way I do this as a chief estimator, I look at the different jobs and put jobs on the books, is I understand the concept of overhead and profit, credit and debit. And if you borrow money, that money's got to be paid back. So a bond referendum now, while money's cheap, is not too bad of an idea to try to get ourselves out of a hole. But that money's going to have to be paid out. Let's look to see what we can do with the state government, the federal government, before we continually put ourselves in a hole. We're $2.5 billion in the hole, spending $600-700 million a year just in interest to service this debt. So we're in trouble right now. So let's start paying this back. And then we can actually, I would look at every budget. Once I got on council, I would look at every budget to see where everybody's at. I would institute a stopgap. In other words, let's take a look at the budgets. Let's take it. Look at who we're hiring. Let's take a look at seeing where we are exactly at this point in time. Because if you don't know where you're at money-wise in a budget at any point in time, you're spinning your wheels. You have no idea that if you can afford this or if you want this. Wants and needs. Do you need this service? Yes. Do you want something else? Of course. But that's how you grow a city. You don't want to be stagnated, but you don't want to spend yourself into bankruptcy either.
Absolutely. I've been learning a lot this year about living on a budget. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort and intentionality to manage money well. So you have some interesting practical safety ideas. I saw you made some suggestions about addressing some of the dark spaces at the oceanfront. I actually used to live off 24th and Baltic and rode my bike down there quite a bit. And there definitely are some dark streets. So what would you propose in terms of, you know, specifically tell people about that specific safety idea with addressing the dark spaces, but what other safety issues do you see and what other solutions would you propose if you were elected?
Well, also the lighting is inadequate. You know, that is a true safety issue. And a young lady like yourself, you know, you're very vulnerable. You're open to harassment or whatever. So let's light the place up. Let's actually ask businesses to light up their alleyways so that you can see what's going on. If you can at least see what's going on, then you can make the determination, well, do I want to go that way or not? Safety is paramount. You can only rely on the police to a certain point. They can't prevent crime. They can only react to a crime after it's been committed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like putting a roof on. You know, well, it looks like a bad roof job, but if it doesn't leak, you can't sue the roof contractor because it may leak 20 years in the future. So let's look to preventing this deal. Let's actually light the place up. Let's clean the place up. Let's see who and what is hanging around there. As far as kids, you know, skating and everything like that, that's what you're going to find. And that's no big deal. But you don't want to actually find an element of crime and gang activity on that end of it. That's what the detectives are for, and that's what on that end of it. But as far as actually making it as safe as possible, maybe the hotels down there can, you know, they have a hotel association. Maybe they can get together and try to keep everybody safe to utilize the beach. That's the reason to come down there is because of the beach, but people don't feel safe. They're not coming down there. They're not going to spend their money. They're not going to have any beds and heads in a hotel. We're going to lose that revenue, and there goes the shortfall again as far as our tax base. And we've got to start worrying about increasing our revenue and not spending so much money that we don't have any revenue coming in. So we got to actually work together for a change, build a consensus, build a coalition, and let's work together with the citizens of Virginia Beach, the small business owner, to try to make it as safe as humanly possible. And you know yourself, if you come from the West Coast or if you come from the Tri-State area, walking around and enjoying your city is a given. It truly, truly is. And as far as transportation, they have mass transportation systems. But we're maybe struggling to figure out what kind of city that we're going to be. But we no longer have that option anymore. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be a little small backwater town that we're, you know, sitting on the porch swings and swinging back and having lemonade. We now have entered into the 21st century, whether we want to or not. We've got the largest population of any city, and we need to work with our other seven, you know, sister cities to bring all the revenue that we can possibly bring in.
Talk to me about some of the public-private partnership ideas. I know some people running for council are very for those. Some people are against them. What's your position on those? And as a developer, maybe you can shed some light for people who may not even be familiar with what that means. Because I know there's a few things, like I believe the Wave Garden going in down at the oceanfront is a public-private partnership. And what I understand about that, I think there's a variety of ways that those can go. Sometimes the city contributes a variety of things into the project, and then a private developer contributes, and there's different ownership shares or revenue shares or different things. I think they can all be kind of a little bit different, but it's basically a joint project to build something between the city and a private developer that's essentially intended to benefit both parties. Is that an appropriate summary of a public-private partnership?
Well, actually it is. And, you know, and the city is actually, it's a picking winners and losers in that situation. You know, there's quite a few big developers. I've worked with quite a few big developers. You know, Armada Hoffler and Conrad and W.M. Jordan. And, you know, I've worked with these people over the years and everything. But, you know, we've got to look at how we actually use this carrot concessions. You know, the city sends out feelers to see what's going to be out there that the developers would like to do. This Wave Garden that they're talking about, where they actually have an indoor wave garden, then they're going to build a surround where they have tenants and everything like that. But people need to understand what the climate is now and what is the climate going to be in 3 to 5 years when you finally have that build out. And you won't have the tenant build out, which is the stores that you're going to build. And each store can actually build out its own little tenant. So what is the economic outlook that's going to be in 3 to 5 years? And are we building back in the floodplains again? So let's look at this. You know, we've got a sports arena that we just paid $68 million for. And now we have no customers, so we're going to have to poach the customers from the private enterprise people to try to get some revenue into this $68 million sports center. And it's a fantastic center. And if we didn't get hit with this highly deadly infectious disease, Maybe. And also the pavilion that Turner Brothers or Turner Construction built, $200 million for. I don't think that's actually making any money yet.
Where's that?
That's the pavilion down at the beach. We're on 19th Street, big, large, huge complex.
Okay.
You know, they hold events there. And
where they do concerts and stuff like that?
That's the...
I'm thinking 30th Street. I'll have to go look. Maybe I haven't seen that.
Beautiful building.
Yeah, I'm probably familiar. I've probably gone by it a bunch of times and just didn't realize what it was. So with the Wave Garden specifically, I think it's an interesting point to look at, you know, where the economy is now. Do you think that it's possible to project where we're going to be 3 to 5 years in the future? I mean, no one knew we would be where we are now. And, you know, hopefully we'll come out into something better than where we are now. Do you think it makes sense to not develop things on the chance that we're not in a good place? Because couldn't you miss out on opportunities that way as well?
Well, Emily, you know, we're in a competition with the other coastal cities and the other resorts, you know, up and down the East Coast, Myrtle Beach, Fort Myers, a lot of places in Florida. So you've got to have amenities. You've got to have a draw. But that's a two-edged sword. You've got to be smart enough business-wise, and everybody makes mistakes. But you got to look at the viability. Now, what was such a carrot for this Wave Garden deal or the sports center that we spent and put out this kind of money that we thought that in the 3 to 5 years build-out, that this customer base will be there. So they look at studies after studies, and they see what the projected growth is going to be in any field. And the sports center one, they looked at what was needed, where the closest venues were, either in Hampton or Newport News, and draw from the other states or draw from the other areas to fill this out as a... for lack of a better description, a better place to actually have trials and...
Right, track meets and things like that. I was reading about the opening. It sounded like they're already booked through all of next year, at least every weekend. I mean, it sounds like they have quite a bit in place already starting, I want to say, in December. They're planning to ramp things up, obviously. Sure, there'll be some level of precautions they'll have to follow, but it sounded like they were still doing a good job of, you know, starting to have like a slow progression and then, you know, going full force at it next year. So, and I don't know if that's the current state. I mean, that was what I read about it when it opened.
Well, that's the same thing with me. We're just going to have to, you know, actually get on council and then look at the budgets and see where our return on investment truly is.
For sure.
And see, you know, on my end of it, when you're estimating a job or you're estimating a project, you automatically know what you're going to have as a return on the investment and what you're going to have to spend to make any concessions, whether it's a new sidewalk, whether it's a new street access, whether it's a tax incentive so they will build it here.
Right.
On that end of it. But you don't want to give away the boat trying to save 10 gallons of gas. It just don't work that way. So you've got to make it viable for the city, but you also got to make it viable if you want a developer to come here and build some project instead of Myrtle Beach or instead of Florida. And that's where the Virginia Beach Development Authority comes in. They're the ones that actually probably send the feelers out to different contractors or developers or people that look to the future to see what our city may or may not need or wants so we can have an edge over the other cities.
That makes sense. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not even trying to advocate for or against the Wave Garden. It's just a particularly interesting topic that I feel like people tend to have strong feelings about one way or another. You know, it's an interesting one to talk about because it is coming up. We've talked a lot tonight so far about budget. So let's jump into maybe a more challenging topic, maybe not. I guess. But I think something that surprised a lot of people this year was the amount of influence that city council had over things like police budgets and first responders and things like that. So what's your position on police reform or, you know, defunding the police? Do you think we'd need police reform in Virginia Beach? Do you think, you know, just what's your position on the state of our police department? And would you try to change anything in relation to it if you were elected?
Well, you know, this is where this racial animus is coming from. And people tend to forget that diversity is a strength. Now, defund the police, that is a misnomer. And I don't know where that came from, or I don't even know who coined that phrase. That's not the way that truly works. Actually, refinance the police force. There's different police forces. There's one in Eugene, Oregon called Cahoots, where they actually hire more mental health people or mental health experts, along with more medical experts. So, you know, the situation, we don't address the mental people that do have mental problems here. It gets to an escalation. That one young man, I believe his name was Daniel Prude, that was totally naked in the street, sitting there, and they handcuffed him. And then, let's face it, he was having a mental breakdown, and he was having mental deliriums, and they put a bag over his head, which is, you know, a person that's having mental problems right then and there, and he died. So at the hands of what was lack of experience, he died.
And that this was here?
No, Daniel Prude, I believe it was, I'm not too sure what city it was. But this is what's going on.
But specifically here, because I know there's a huge country. Every state, every city has different challenges. But specifically here in Virginia Beach with our police department, what do you think is the state of our current police department? And what changes do you think we should make? Because I think it's tough when you get into a conversation about the challenges happening in the entire country when, you know, we may share those same challenges. We may not. Our challenges might be different. So, and, you know, the population is different, the budgets are different, right. The police force is different. So not looking at the entire country, but just on a local level in Virginia Beach, what do you think is the, from what you know, not being on the council, obviously, what do you think is the current state of our police department? And do you intend to change anything in relation to it if you are elected? I guess that maybe is a good way to ask that.
No, absolutely. There's two things that you've got to have. You've got to have transparency. Because without transparency, you can't have trust. So what is going on with our police force as of right this minute? I admit I'm not privy to that. I'm not privy to the new police captain that we've hired. So we need to look at the rank and file. You won't find a police captain or a city manager out there killing and murdering people. No, it's in the rank and file that a lot of people have issues with. And is inherent bias in each and every one of us? Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. So we've got to work on situations and work on training to make sure that we know exactly what to do. I think we need to ban chokeholds. You don't need to go out there and choke somebody. And I believe, you know, use of deadly force. As a military person, I understand what weapons are truly used for. So we need to actually look at that as a last resort. And we need to actually have transparency and maybe a citizen review panel that actually has some teeth that they can actually bring charges and everything. But there's a thing that the Supreme Court handed down in 1967, and I think it was Pearson versus that, and the Supreme Court handed down the thing, it's a product called qualified immunity. And it's a civil thing that they can't be sued because you got to prove that the precedent for this one case that you're going to try to bring to trial actually happened before, so there's a precedent for that. But you can't divide by zero, and you can't prove a negative. So there's no way that you can be held accountable for this situation. And I think Virginia Beach needs to show leadership by actually hiring more mental health experts and more people in the medical field and send these people out on the calls that, because the dispatchers know that there's a problem, that they can actually send somebody out there that has a little bit of expertise in that end of it. So we got to have transparency and trust. Because without those two, we've got to make sure the citizens of Virginia Beach, and especially our police officers, I much rather call them peace officers. They need to understand that they're there to protect and serve and not actually create situations where the escalation of this process is going to actually lead to a situation where somebody won't come home, whether it's a police department or whether it's a person that they went out to look at. So we've got to actually have some people there that have a little bit of expertise. And I believe it's ongoing training. I believe that if there's problems with some of our police officers, that the Citizen Review Board, that's where the transparency come in. Instead of the police union hiding it, or the police captain hiding it, let's bring it out in the open. We don't have the same ability to not have our records out there like the police department does. We should hold them to a higher standard. They have a gun. They have a badge. They have the right to stop you for just about any reason. So let's put back a little faith into our police department, and let's have the police department put back a little faith into the citizens for a change.
From what I've heard, and I haven't deeply researched our police specifically in Virginia Beach, but I believe that we have banned chokeholds here, and we do have a citizen review board. And I think all of our police records are available online, or at least there's quite a bit that's available online. So I'm interested to see, you know, going forward, what changes happen or, you know, need to happen potentially with Virginia Beach Police specifically, because it sounds like they've done quite a bit to try to be in a good position. I'm not for or against, you know, any particular thing. It's just interesting to me to talk to different candidates and hear the different perspectives and, you know, try to figure out what's actually going on here, because I think it's so hard in a heated conversation about challenges on a national level, you know, to understand like what's actually happening in our city with our particular police department and, you know, where are they doing things really well? And where are there things that we can grow in? Because everybody has that, right? Everybody has things. Well, hopefully everybody has things they're doing well. You know, we all have things we need to do better. So speaking of that, what would you say as we're getting ready to wrap up here, what do you think is the biggest area of opportunity for our city? What's the thing that you're the most excited about looking forward for our city, the greatest area of opportunity where we can thrive? And how would you contribute to that if you were on city council?
Well, you know, there is the diversity study for the women-owned and minority-owned and disabled veterans-owned businesses that we can actually enhance. If we put the infrastructure that we need to do anyway, we're going to have to spend the money anyway. Let's put it out for bid so these small contractors, you know, get a shot at the city to level the, you know, have a little parity and level the playing ground. Whether it's in education, whether you come from an affluent neighborhood where the schools are much better, much well equipped than a school that's 60 years old in a less affluent neighborhood. I believe there's no school in the city of Virginia Beach that you should be able to go to and not have the same level of education. You should have the same level of education. And we need to reach out as diversity, as a strength. We need to have transparency. Without transparency, there's no trust. We need to look at all our budgets and actually look at them as a business deal and actually have that business acumen to be able to look at any situations that we're going to see in the future to move our city forward and stop spending money needlessly. And but then again, you know, mistakes will be made. And I don't hold it personally accountable to anybody in the existing city council. I just believe the lack of decision making has put us in this bind and put us behind the eight ball in a lot of the situations, especially with mitigating flooding, because flooding is going to be the number one issue. If we keep having catastrophic storms because of climate change, and we will, then we're going to put more of our infrastructure, more of our homeowners, more of their homes, more of their infrastructure at risk. So we're going to have to look at the billions of dollars that we're going to put in jeopardy simply because we flat refuse to take that first step of any journey and start cleaning out our ditches, start dredging our holding ponds, start changing the culvert systems to where they can handle the water, look at where this water is going, look at our tree canopies, look at our wetlands to put this back together, and this will create more jobs, this will create a better economy. Look at the transportation sector, look at the right-of-way from the old Norfolk Southern, increase that, have a jogging path, have a shuttle path, maybe set up a marathon to go back and forth and actually set up little stores on the way in, move them from, alleviate the parking from downtown. We don't have a downtown. We have a collection of towns. It's not true. Like Norfolk. But this will actually alleviate the parking from Virginia Beach and Oceanfront so people can actually go down there, enjoy a day, spend some money, increase the revenue, increase the ability for the business owners down there to have a viable district, you know, where it's cleaned up, where it's well lit, and where people can actually enjoy themselves for a change, not worry about, you know, somebody coming down a dark alley, either going to attack you or throw something at you one way or the other. And on that end of it, let's see. If there's any questions, I'd love to answer any questions that anybody might have. You know, I'm Gary Hubbard. I'm a local businessman. I'm a military veteran. I'm the only one running in Rose Hall that is a small business owner and a military veteran. And the military here is our largest employer. And they've actually got to have the security knowing that where they live, that they can get back to wherever their ship is or wherever their unit is, without worrying about renting a canoe and swimming that way. So we've got to increase our resilience to where the Navy is secure here, and so they don't have to worry about any base realignments or base closing. So military's got to be able to conduct war games off the coast of Virginia, so no to any offshore drilling.
Okay. That was a great wrap up. There's so many more things we could talk about, but I put your Facebook up here. I didn't find a website for you. Do you have a website, or is your Facebook the best place to send people?
Well, the Facebook is the best place to send it now. My website is under construction, but there's quite a few things that's wrong with it. And let's face it, some of us are social media illiterate, and I raise my hand to that.
Well, it looks like you have social media going on, so no worries. So if you want to learn more about Gary, again, he's running for city council for the Rose Hall District. You can look him up on facebook.com/Gary with two R's, Hubbard with two B's, the word for, and then the letters VBCC. So Gary Hubbard for VBCC on Facebook, or if you just go on Facebook and search Gary Hubbard for Virginia Beach City Council or Google that, you'll find his Facebook page. And thank you so much, Gary, for tuning in. For anyone who's watching that does not already, go follow Smart Citizen on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Smart Citizen USA. You can now listen to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts and hear our full conversation with all of our guests. And we also are streaming all of our videos on YouTube now as well. So you can find us everywhere that you would possibly want to look to find us. And Gary, thanks again so much for the conversation today. I enjoyed it. I appreciate your time. And I hopefully look forward to speaking to you again.
Well, thank you, Emily, for hosting us and putting this forum out there so the citizens of Virginia Beach can make an informed decision. You know, we deserve change. And join me in being that change.